Welcome to I Run Radio. Coming up, a legend inspires more women to run.
Who would have ever imagined that the bib I wore in the Boston Marathon in 1967, 50 years ago, suddenly became a number meaning fearless in the face of adversity? And from that, a team of women and myself formed a nonprofit called 261 Fearless, which takes that wonderful sense of empowerment and self-esteem that you get from running and goes out and organizes community clubs and is a movement to get women to simply put one foot in front of the other and feel empowered.
And a prolific writer on why we run.
There's something so elemental about running. You know, there's nothing which as basic as that to human nature. We run essentially. You know, in evolutionary terms, we had to run to survive. We had to run to eat, and we had to run to avoid being eaten. And there's something about running which has this kind of basic rhythmic appeal to us, I think.
We're going to talk to the legendary husband and wife running and writing team of Catherine Switzer and Roger Robinson coming up on I Run Radio. We're joined now by the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
How's your week been?
I'm feeling pretty good. A little tired today, I guess I must confess, skipped my run, but overall...
You skipped your run?
All right.
That is not what you're supposed to say at the beginning of a running show. You skipped your run.
I don't run magazine. Yeah, I just, today I could. I don't know how many people listening have ever been there, but it's just like, ugh. Nothing more sorry than I had my like winter running room running socks on and my ASICS special underwear, and I just had to take all that stuff off. And I was like, isn't
so you were you were dressed and ready to go, and you bailed.
I was.
Wow.
It's one of those things. It's one of those things too. When you kind of like delay, you know, if you delay, it's like when you put that stuff on, just go. But once you've been on, but tomorrow, in other news, which is why I can afford a day like today, because tomorrow my Boston Marathon training officially kicks off. I'm training with Black Toe Running, and I'm the slowest guy in the group, and there's all these people, and we're all doing Boston, and my first one is tomorrow, 6:45, so a new chapter's about to unfold.
I always say the first step of the run is the hardest, right? Once you get going, though, you're not going to turn around, it's unlikely that you're going to bail once you're a kilometer or two into the thing, but... It's getting out the door sometimes that's challenging, which is why I always try to do it as early as I can, because then you know, by the end of the day, you've accumulated excuses, right?
Yeah. And then the question is that running clothes dirty now that I've worn them all day, but didn't wear them? Does that clarify as clean? I have to ask the experts.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have Catherine Switzer coming up on the show. I'm sure she would give you some advice on how not to skip a run. Although, one of the things we're going to talk about, she actually ran the Boston Marathon last year in a time that was only a little bit slower than the time that she posted 50 years ago when she was the first woman to register and run the Boston Marathon in 1967. And she says the reason for that is now she only runs every second day. She used to be obsessed with running every day, running as often as she could. And now she's older, obviously, as we all are. And she is saying that as she has gotten older, she's learned you need the rest and you got to run every second day. So maybe there's something in that for you.
Well, I keep reading, John Stanton's tweets. He's like, sleep is a runner's best friend and all of that. So,
There you go.
Sleep is a runner's best friend. What do I know?
Yeah. So Catherine Switzer's on the show today, which is great. She is, of course, a trailblazing, incredibly inspiring person. She was the first woman to register and run Boston in 1967. She has done so much for the women's running movement throughout her career. She has this organization called 261 Fearless. 261 was her bib number in Boston in 1967. We're going to talk about that. Also, her husband, Roger Robinson, is a prolific writer about running. He's authored, along with her in some cases and on his own in others, a number of different running books. And we're going to talk to him about his latest book. And I always enjoy talking to them. You and I met them and hung out with them for a few minutes. Where was that? Was that for the Toronto Marathon last year?
It is, and they're coming back again this year. I just got the announcement yesterday. So,
okay.
Yeah, that was fun. We hooked her up with Lainey Marchand, and they did a talk together.
That's
and everything.
Right.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
Super cool.
And by the way, on next week's show, Annalie Buschetto is going to join us from the iRun team. And you were telling me about this, Ben. She has a great story to tell about the impact running has had on her life.
Well, yeah, you know, she ran her first marathon within a year of having her first child. And one of the things that she says, too, is that she runs to show her kids that anything is possible. And, you know, she's made some big decisions that she's reached on her runs and running abroad. And I'm sure she'll get into all of that. So she's very inspiring and also very wonderful.
Yeah, she's terrific. And you know, it's interesting you say that about inspiring your kids, because that does pop into my head from time to time. And I remember talking with Carl Subban, who is the father of P.K. Subban and Malcolm Subban. There are three Subban brothers playing in the National Hockey League. And he has written a book about parenting, basically, about what it takes to inspire your kids to do great things and how their family life was when they were kids. And obviously, he's got a lot to say about the subject as someone who has three sons in professional hockey. And I asked him, you know, how do you strike the right balance between pushing your kids a bit, not to give up and not to, you know, not to sign up for something and quit halfway through and kind of push them in the direction of being active and being involved and participating in sports without overdoing that, without being, you know, kind of the tiger parent, right? Without being the overzealous
yep.
mom or dad. And he said it was all about inspiring your kids, not pushing them, inspiring them. And so I think about that in the context of my running. Not that I want my kids to be runners. If they want to do it, obviously I'll support them. If they want to do something else, I'll support them. But I know that when I go out for a run, my kids are watching me and they see my behavior and they see that I'm trying to stay in shape. And in some cases, you know, we were on holidays last week and both my kids wanted to run with me. So I did a little loop with each of them. And
yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to tell them to be runners. I'm not going to force them to sign up for races or anything like that. But if they ask and if they, you know, if they have questions about why I run or if they ask to go with me, then absolutely I'm going to answer those questions and I'm going to take them out on a run from time to time if they want to do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have a friend and his kid for Halloween grabbed my buddy's running shoes and jacket and he went as dad for Halloween and to go
oh,
with his
cool.
dad. He actually, yeah, he wrote about that for us. So that was his costume. And wow, how does that swell the heart?
Yeah, exactly. That's when you know you're making an impression for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Ben. Well, I hope you are not tired tomorrow when you start your Boston training. Hope it all goes well. We'll be chatting about your road to Boston in the weeks ahead, I'm sure. Thank you very much for being on the show once again this week.
I appreciate that, and I'm going to review your book again for inspiration as I go. That's going to be my reading material. Must read book for sure.
All right. Sounds good. Ben Kaplan,
sure.
iRun's general manager and editor. Coming up next, the one and only Catherine Switzer. Discover the Pentathlon des Neiges, presented by MEC, the world's biggest winter multisport with 6,000 participants on the historical Plains of Abraham. It's also for you. Visit pentathlondesneiges.com. Welcome back to iRun Radio. iRun Radio is on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa, and you can also listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at irun.ca. Just click on radio. In 1967, more than 50 years ago, Catherine Switzer became the first woman to register for and run the Boston Marathon. You may know the story. One of the race officials tried to remove her from the course because women weren't supposed to run the race. It was considered unsafe. Catherine's boyfriend at the time blocked that race official from doing so. There was a picture taken. It appeared in newspapers all over the world, and it inspired a generation of women runners. Catherine has since authored several books, and she has founded the organization 261 Fearless. The 261 represents her bib number from the 1967 Boston Marathon. Catherine, it is great to chat with you. Thank you for being on iRun Radio.
Oh, Mark, it's great to talk to you, especially right now over all these miles, because we're actually talking. I'm in New Zealand and you're in Canada, so
yeah.
This is amazing.
And also, you are in tomorrow. You are a day ahead of me right now as we speak. So, yeah.
I know. If you want to know the future, just ask me. I can tell you.
Yeah, I remember actually. I guess it would have been, I'm trying to think, it would have been the Olympics that happened in Australia in the 1970s, maybe, or maybe it was the Commonwealth Games or something. And anyway, I was a child in the 1970s, and my dad put the Olympics on or whatever event it was and said, this is happening tomorrow. And I, you know, I tried to understand it, but as a kid, I couldn't. And it just made no sense to me that I was watching something that was happening the next day. I was looking at the future.
Well, yeah. It is a fun experience of crossing the date line.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
So you have lots of great things coming in the future as well. I know that you've continued. The last time we spoke, we talked about the initiative that you have spearheaded and pioneered, 261 Fearless, and you're going to have a team running in Boston next year, right?
Yeah. You know, this is really exciting, Mark. After all of these years. Who would have ever imagined that the bib I wore in the Boston Marathon in 1967, 50 years ago, suddenly became a number meaning fearless in the face of adversity. And from that, a team of women and myself formed a nonprofit called 261 Fearless, which takes that wonderful sense of empowerment and self-esteem that you get from running and goes out and organizes community clubs and is a movement to get women to simply put one foot in front of the other and feel empowered through the act of running or even walking for that matter, but mostly creating a non-judgmental community of women around the world. And one of our major fundraising events is the Boston and New York City marathons, in particular the Boston Marathon, because that's where it all began. And last year we had a team of 125 people who ran and raised money for 261 Fearless. And this year we've got a team of 45 women, which is very, very exciting. A big group, but a manageable group. And we're it's just an amazing, amazing time. We filled already all of our bibs. They're busy fundraising. And once again, you know, we're 51 years later, we're going to be back on the streets of Boston. It's amazing to celebrate there because, as I say, that's where mostly it began. And at least the revolution began there. And to see how the very visibly at Boston, the progress in women's running is so visible there, because Boston being kind of the granddaddy of races and the one that, you know, famously excluded me, and the one that now has a tough qualifying time, and yet is essentially 50-50 men and women now. So 50 years has created a very important social revolution on the streets of Boston for women, and it's great to be back there to celebrate. I'd really love to encourage all the listeners, women listeners anyway, to join us as friends of 261 Fearless. If you go to 261fearless.org, you can sign up and be a friend, or you can think about starting a club in your own community, and we'd really love you to do that.
That's terrific. And you know, I think running really represents freedom and empowerment in so many ways, that especially for women, and I've talked to many, many different women on the show and just at expos and things like that, that running really represents something in their lives of being able to carve out some time for themselves, to do something for themselves, to improve themselves, to raise money for something that matters to them. It really is a form of empowerment for women, isn't it?
It really is, and it's always kind of amazing for us because we say, jeepers, all I do is put on my sneakers and go out and put one foot in front of the other. And yet, it gives us all that sense of empowerment. Men, too, for that matter. But women are particularly addictive, I think, because our lives are really quite fragmented and stressed. And this is a thing that we do for ourselves, but it changes everything else in our lives in a positive way. One of the things I'm most excited about with women's running is we're into the second generation now of women who have grown up watching mommy run. So that changes, and that this is really important for young boys and men too. You know, that running used to be very weird and unusual for women, and now to see, you know, it's the new normal, and that's great for the health and equality. In running, what is really wonderful about men and women, because men have helped us so much, it's really almost gender-free. And in this era of sexual contentiousness, it is really amazing to have an activity where men and women compete together and motivate each other and encourage each other in a way that is not at all sexual or violent or implies anything other than simply motivation, good health, train hard, go for it. You know, it is really, really quite remarkable.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There are a few other sports that are co-ed, but not to the same extent as running in a lot of cases, and many sports that are still divided amongst the genders, and the women play with the women, and the girls play with the girls, the boys play with the boys, and so on. And yet running, we're all out there together. We're all pursuing our own individual goals. We're not really competing with each other in most cases, and it's just a great atmosphere of celebration and personal progress together.
Yeah, that's really, really amazing, really amazing and really true. And if a woman outruns a man doesn't get upset by it usually because he said, well, she's trained harder. And what also is encouraging for women is the more we're into the sport, we're realizing that the longer the event is, the better women are suited for it.
Yeah.
So in fact, there's going to be an equalizing point where we know that in some of these ultra races, women are winning completely outright, because women actually excel in endurance, stamina, flexibility, and imbalance. Men have it all over us in terms of strength, speed, and power. But there is a sweet meeting point, and I don't know what it is, maybe at about 60 or 70 miles, because women are winning 100 milers right out now. And it's going to be interesting. That's a really interesting thought about how the future of sport is going to look.
What can you say about the role that fate has played in your life? Because you couldn't have planned what ended up happening in the Boston Marathon of 1967 and the impact it had on your life and all that has arisen from that historic moment of you participating and the movement that it's created. So it is interesting how life works, that you're in a situation and something potentially enormous grows out of it, isn't it?
Yes, but there are two ways of looking at this, my dear. One is we all have moments in our lives when something happens to us, and it's how we make the decision to handle it that changes everything.
Sure.
So, for instance, when the official tacked me in the Boston Marathon, I really wanted to step off the course and go home to my mother. But I knew if I did that, nobody would believe I was serious. And I knew that I couldn't let being embarrassed and being afraid keep me from finishing a dream, which was to finish the Boston Marathon. I wasn't there in the first place to prove anything politically. I was there, I was proud of being a girl, but I wasn't there to prove anything because women had run marathons before me, not officially. Even at Boston, Roberta Gibb had run the race, so I knew I wasn't the first one. So that wasn't the object. The object was to run my first marathon. So when that happened, you know, I could have stepped off the course, not finished, and we wouldn't be having this conversation. And as I say, everyone has a moment in their lives when they can make the decision. Maybe it's not as enormous as that, but every time there's an injustice or something that's wrong, you can pick that up and look at it a different way and say, wait a minute, I'm capable of taking responsibility for making a positive change here. And most people don't, because they don't really pay attention. And in this case, you know, I had to pay attention, I guess. I guess the second way of looking at it is, you know, is that fate? Well, yeah, because you couldn't have repeated the series of circumstances in a million years that led to that moment happening. You know, it was bad weather. It was my boyfriend deciding at the last minute he was going to come with us. It was my coach believing in me and insisting I sign up for the race rather than just going up and jumping in Boston, which is what I thought people did. I didn't know you went and signed up for it. So by doing all of those things, that those coincidences came into a critical sort of perfect storm. And but I'll tell you the truth, Mark. This is what I really believe. I really believe destiny is finishing the job, you know? I believe we make our own destiny, and too many people give up or quit. But destiny is finishing the job. It's staying the course, and it's seeing it out for better or worse.
Yeah.
And I did that, and as it played out, it was a very difficult road for 50 years. It was a lot of hard work, but it played out in many wonderful, positive ways that nobody could ever have imagined, even me. I couldn't have imagined that we were going to form a nonprofit when I'm 68 years old. I could never have believed I would have my first elite athlete sportswear contract at age 70. You know,
good for you.
You know,
good for you.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of lessons to be learned from this story, that's for sure.
Sure. Well, and I think, look, a couple of things. I think you, knowing you and knowing the kind of person you are, you were always going to do something amazing no matter what. It's just that circumstances put you in this position to do something amazing with this. And you know, the events that happened in 1967 put you in place to do that kind of thing. But you, no matter what, you were going to do something incredible. That's just kind of who you are.
Well, I'm glad you had that kind of faith in me, Mark. Honestly, that's really, really very, very yeah. nice. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, Catherine, we have to take a break, but I want to hear more about your running these days. I know you've changed your training regimen a little bit. Catherine Switzer, the legendary trailblazing runner, is our guest on iRun Radio. We'll be right back. iRun Radio is brought to you by New Balance Canada, whose 806 V8. Released this fall, is the perfect new road shoe whether your distance is the 5K or the marathon. The 806 V8 is fast, light, and comfortable. It's the perfect shoe for helping you reach a new PB. We're chatting with Catherine Switzer, who in 1967 became the first woman to register and run the Boston Marathon. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to Catherine's husband, who has been an elite runner, a broadcaster, and an author, Roger Robinson. But Catherine, I wanted to ask you about how your running is going these days, because you participate in many of the events the 261 Fearless is a part of.
Well, more than that, I mean, listen, I've had a slam dunk of a year. I really, really have. You know, I trained hard for Boston, because I was really worried once I put it out there that I was going to run Boston on my 50th anniversary. As I got closer to the day, I said, my God, people are going to remember me more for not being able to finish this race than if I do finish this race. And I trained hard. I really did. And I'll tell you about the training in a minute. But what happened is the race unfolded and I ran beautifully. And in fact, I ran 24 minutes, only 24 minutes slower at age 70 than I did when I was 20 years old in my first marathon.
Wow.
And yeah. So I ran a 4:44, but here's the interesting thing. I stopped 13 times and walked. I did 8 interviews that were at least a minute each. I hugged all kinds of people along the course. I just had a ball. I wasn't there to run at all hard, but it unfolded and I ran well. So now in a fit of delusion after finishing the 50th anniversary, and by the way, that made me the first woman in history to run a marathon 50 years after her first one. Now, that is not testimony to any greatness on my part. Believe me, it is it's testimony to how few women ran 50
right.
years before. So it's not going to be unusual. We all know now, of course, plenty of women at 70, 80, even 90 run marathons. So that is not unusual. But what it is proving is that the more in shape you stay, the longer and fitter you can be your whole life, and the healthier, longer, better, and more optimistically you can live. So that is barrier breaking, because people talk about old people now the way they talked about women 50 years ago. They say to old people, oh, you should slow down. You should take it easy. You might have a heart attack. And that's what they used to say to women.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So now we're breaking the aging barrier. That is something I'm very, very excited about. So, you know, you talk about, was I determined to do something important? Yeah, I think the important thing I'm doing now is not only the 261 Fearless of getting so many women empowered, but of actually running and proving that you can still, if you keep it together, you have good luck, you don't have injuries, you can really you can really chase a lot of demons away and bad health away. I went on and ran New York City Marathon as well this year, and was wired for my vital signs. I guess they thought I was an old fart, and they wanted people to see what my heart rate was like and my sweat rate and my body temperature. So it's all fascinating, and it's all good. And I'm putting it out there now. I'm planning on, if possible, running the London Marathon, because that was in England. That was a race I helped put together many, many years ago, but never got an opportunity to run. So that's going to be very exciting.
Well, good for you. And what kind of training are you doing these days? And how have you adapted your training to your current circumstances?
What I have adapted it to, and with the help of a physio who advised me on this, and I went into it kicking and screaming, was only to run every other day. So I run every other day, but the quality of the run is better because I'm recovered.
Right.
And then on the other days, I do core work. And work on my midsection. I haven't been in balance. I haven't been doing that as much as I should, but lately since Boston. But I'll get back to it. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good for you. And you're still enjoying it. You enjoy the experience of getting out for a run.
I actually do, because of not having the pressure to run every day.
Mm.
It's something I've begun to look forward to more than ever. And because of the busy schedule, the run itself and the training have broken a tremendous amount of stress. You know, if you're going to get ready for a marathon, you have to do the training. So you can't just put it off. And by having to go out and do it, I've managed my time better, and I've broken a lot of stress. So it's all been very, very good. And you know what I think I should do is, I think we should put Roger Robinson on this call now.
Sure.
What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be able to talk to both of you.
Great. Well, yeah. He's here, and he's been a huge inspiration to me in terms of getting back my fitness, because Roger has been a super world-class runner all of his life. But he has a new addition to his running family. I'll let him tell you about
that. Well, listen,
Mark,
before you go,
you.
Let me say thank you to you for being on the show, but also for all you have done as a pioneer of women's running, how many people you've inspired, and you know, your legacy is at every event that that any of us go to, where we see huge numbers of women participating in 10Ks, half marathons, and marathons because of the groundwork you laid as a pioneer in this sport. So thank you for that as well.
Well, Mark, thank you very, very much for those kind words, and for your listeners also. Thank you for your kind support. But it's been an honor and a privilege. And so thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, here's Roger Robinson.
All right.
Hello, Mark.
How are you?
Well, my new knee is called Mark.
Your new knee?
I now have two knee replacements.
Okay.
The first one that was installed 6 years ago is called Russell. It was named after the surgeon that did it.
All right.
And the new one is called Mark because he's named after the surgeon in America who fitted it.
Okay.
So I feel I'm running in company. And the great thing is, you see, that when having had the knee replacement, Mark can now have, every time he walks or runs, it becomes a lifetime personal best.
Wow. So
when you get to my age, you have to set these incentives.
Sure.
To yourself.
Now, are you running with your knee replacements?
I'm just beginning to run on this one. This is very early days. It's only 4 months old.
Okay.
It was done at the end of August. I'm being, as I was with the first one, very cautious. And what I've got up to so far, we did a race in Wellington on Sunday, a 10K race, which I walked virtually the whole way, but I slipped into it 9 times 1 minute of jogging.
Okay, so you're on your way back. That's great.
Yes, I'm on my way back, having started with just 50 paces, or 10 paces, and then 20 paces, and then 50 paces.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you about the state of running and about your own experiences and much of the writing that you've done about the sport in a moment. But I want to ask you first about your wife and about just the role that she has played as a pioneer of women's running. You've been able to observe a lot of it and the impact that she's had. And you travel to events together and you see people coming up to her and talking about how much of an inspiration she's been to them. So how would you describe what Catherine has done for and continues to do for women's running?
Well, it has been remarkable, and it's been achieved not so much by what she did, though obviously that first Boston Marathon was the spark of it, but by her own personality and the generosity with which she talks to other women and encourages other women, and of course spent many years creating opportunities for other women. So one of the chapters in my forthcoming book is about the development of women's running, and her Avon circuit was one of the most important things. And she put huge amount of time. She was doing that when we first met. And one of my jokes is that she was on an expense account with Avon Cosmetics, so our relationship was based on her expense account.
Yeah, and that's it. I remember that running series, and I know people here in Ottawa who were connected to it, including Ken Parker, who that was a very important series there are women's only events today, but that was. That series was much more at a stage when women were new to running, and so it played a pioneering role in bringing women out in the sport, didn't it?
You're absolutely right, and it had all kinds of good elements to it. It was designed to introduce absolute beginners to running, with no pressure on them to succeed. But it also had one of the most impressive parts about it is that it had this. Structure of competitive progress. So if a woman won, for instance, the Ottawa race, she would then have her expenses paid to go to the Canadian Avon race.
Right.
And if she got in the first three in that, then she would have her expenses paid to go to the global Avon race. It was a marvelous incentive structure for the top athletes. And at that time, when women's running was only just developing, it was absolutely crucial in raising standards and really breeding and training a whole new generation of competitive women runners.
So let's talk a little bit about your new book then. Tell me more about what you're working on, what this book is going to be about.
Well, my interest, Mark, has always been in the significance of running. I say other people write how-to books about running, and I really write what I call why-to books, which means, you know, why run? Why is it worth putting so much effort in, other than just for our own health and well-being? It's something which has a much larger cultural and historical significance. And so that's what I write about. I'm one of the first people to write about that. And it's not just history. It's more it's history and significance. And so this particular book is partly personal, because it's based entirely on events that I have been witness to in some way or other, either as a runner or as a spectator or a stadium announcer or a television announcer. I've done all of those things. But it's about 21 events. It's called When Running Made History. So 21 running events which went beyond running in their significance. So starting, just for instance, with seeing Emil Zatopek win the Olympic gold medal in 1948 when I was a little boy in London. And seeing the significance of that as a post-war event, and suddenly we saw somebody who was potentially an enemy in war terms, because the Soviet states were at that point, but behaving in a way that was completely encouraging, friendly, positive, greeting every other runner, encouraging them as he lapped them, and behaving in an absolutely wonderful sporting way. So that was a real revelation to the fact that sport can overcome war. So it goes right through from me as a little 9-year-old boy watching Emil Zatopek, and then me as an elite athlete running on the American circuit in the 1980s, along with some top Canadians like Paul William and Jackie Garrow. And then the last chapters are about me as a journalist in my 70s being present at the Boston bombings and what that meant for the sport. So it's all these historical events.
Wow.
The Berlin Marathon in 1990, just for instance, where Catherine and I were running in that 3 days before German reunification.
Hmm. All right, Roger, we have to take a break, but I want to hear more about your book. When we come back, we're talking with author Roger Robinson. We'll be right back on iRun Radio. Registration is now open for the Tamarack Ottawa Race Weekend. It's Canada's biggest marathon weekend. May 26th and 27th with a kids race, a 2K, 5K, 10K, half marathon, marathon, and the Lumberjack Challenge. Four races covering a distance of 59.2K. It's the event of the year, and we'd love to see you there. Author Roger Robinson is our guest on I Run Radio. We were talking before the break about how you were one of the first writers to talk about something that's really important to me, why we run, as opposed to how to run. So why do you think it is that we are so passionate about running?
It's hard to define, but there's something so elemental about running. You know, there's nothing which as basic as that to human nature. You could possibly swimming, but we don't really swim essentially, but we run essentially. You know, in evolutionary terms, we had to run to survive. We had to run to eat, and we had to run to avoid being eaten. And there's something about running which has this kind of basic rhythmic appeal to us, I think. And that's why one or two sections in this book are about why running has taken on this both a celebratory aspect. It's become a new way of celebrating. You can imagine if you want to do something in a city, then put on a big marathon and everybody comes out with the balloons and their rattles and they cheer, and it's I call it a new form of celebration, and also a way of going through a kind of cathartic process and recovering from disaster. And so running does that as well. So, you know, the Berlin Marathon in 1990 was a huge celebration of, you know, the coming of freedom and the end of German partition.
And then the
New York Marathon which I was also at, New York Marathon in 2001 was a huge statement of recovery and resilience, and we are not going to allow ourselves to be knocked out of something as basic as running by the terrorist attacks. So it has this ritual function. And as I say, as a historian, this goes right back to the ancient Greeks who used to put on track meets with running races at their big funerals.
At funerals?
Yes, at funerals.
Wow.
And it's in a way, it's a hard concept, but when you think we, as it were, celebrate the person who's died and we affirm the ongoing life by having poetry and music at funerals. You know, I can say I was just at one yesterday. I was at my brother's funeral right now. And there was his favorite music, and I read a poem as well as doing a eulogy. Well, the Greeks went out and ran, and that's a way of affirming life. They had races, and the very first races recorded are those in Homer's Iliad and Odyssey, and in each case the races are at what they call funeral games, and that's where the Olympic Games started.
Fascinating. But there is something life-affirming about running. There is something that is...
There is, exactly. Yeah, and then you affirm life for yourself, but I mean, it's a fascinating thing because it's so individual. You know, we all know, Mark, you go out and in a way you're running on your own, but there's something also magic about running with a whole lot of other people.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. Otherwise, you know, and that's the thing that I find interesting is that you would think it would be entirely physical. If you can run 42 kilometers, then you can do that by yourself or with a group of people. But the experience is totally different if you're doing it with a group of people than if you're just off by yourself running 42 kilometers, even though the physical aspect of it is exactly the same.
Exactly. It just makes it more significant. And I think that in a way, that's what this book is about. It's about why these particular races were significant beyond just being just races.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's not exactly a random selection, but it's a highly personal one because I was at all of them.
Right.
There are some really big historical events that I wasn't at. I wasn't at Boston in 1967 when Catherine got attacked. For instance, you know, I would love to have included that one, but I couldn't because I wasn't there. I mean, I'm delighted to say that a lot of journalists misreported and say I was there, and you know, then I strut about because I like to think I was the big guy who knocked the fish over.
Right, but people don't know you weren't in Catherine's life at that time. You
was, no, yeah. I was. I didn't come into life for another 16 years after that.
Yeah,
but I like, you know, as a skinny, bald little marathon runner, you know, I like to feel that they think I was a big hammer throwing football player.
Yeah, that's very funny.
And I mean, another key one that I wasn't at was the 1976 New York Marathon when it went into the city and clearly was a formative event.
Yeah. Yeah, and what do you...
And by the way, you mentioned Ken Parker. I once ran in a men's only race in Ottawa. Do you know about that?
No, I don't. Tell me about that.
Ah, well, Ken Parker was one of the main players, along with a number of Ottawa women. And the way that this happened was that this is 1983, so I just met Catherine, and this is the first time that she and I had toured together in North America. And the women of Ottawa wanted to put on a race for the men to thank the men for their support in helping women's running to develop. It was a very nice thing to do.
Wow.
And they invited Catherine up to be the race starter as a kind of symbol that you know, women and men were supporting each other. And so they put on a men's only race. I think it was a 5K along the Rideau Canal.
And what's your book going to be called?
It's going to be called When Running Made History.
All right. That's a great title.
Quite simple.
Yeah.
Quite simple. Canada and New Zealand always get on. Well, there's a couple of New Zealand chapters. One, as I said, is about the recovery from the Christchurch earthquake. And the other is when I was announcer at the Commonwealth Games in 1974 in Christchurch. And just what an extraordinary event that was for the Christchurch community. And how the whole community got raised by putting on a big sports event.
There you go.
A parallel to that, there's a Canadian reference there, because I said that what that did for Christchurch was very much like what happened to Vancouver in 1954, and referred to that excellent book by Jason Beck about the 1954 Empire and Commonwealth Games.
Right.
And how putting on those games really put Vancouver into the modern world. And that's what happened to Christchurch in 1974. It's a little remote place at the absolute furthest point from anywhere, South Island of New Zealand. You know, you can't get any more marginal than that. And suddenly it was putting on a cutting-edge sports event, and the first sports event in history to be designed from the outset for color television.
And that is the event that a few minutes ago when I was talking to Catherine, I was saying when I was a child, my dad showed me an event on television and said, this is happening tomorrow, because we were watching tomorrow's events today from New Zealand because of the time difference. So I had mentioned that earlier.
Oh, great. Yeah. Yes, of course.
And I couldn't fathom what that meant at the time, because I was only 5 or 6 years old, but right on.
Well, I have this theory, which I can tell you, but I wouldn't say always in America, that the further north you go on the North American continent, the more literate people become. they buy and read more books.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you will have a lot of interest here in Canada.
Pretty good in Minneapolis, and they're really great up in Canada.
Yeah, you'll have a lot of interest here in Canada. Roger, thank you so much to you and Catherine for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Mark, and all the best to all our Canadian friends.
That's author Roger Robinson. His new book will be out this spring. And we will be back with another edition of iRun Radio next week. I hope you can join us then. Have a great week.